हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्थो मविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, so continuing from Srila Prabhupada's purport. In the material world, one may try to make everything permanent by developing the above-mentioned qualities of goodness. But because the goodness in the material world is mixed with passion and ignorance, nothing here can exist permanently, despite all the good plans of the best scientific brains. There are unlimited Vaikuntha planets in the spiritual sky, and the ratio of these planets to the material planets in the material sky is 3-1. Thus, the poor materialist is busy making political adjustments on a planet that is most insignificant in God's creation. To say nothing of this planet Earth, the whole universe with innumerable planets throughout the galaxies is comparable to a single mustard seed in a bag full of mustard seeds. But the poor materialist makes plans to live comfortably here and thus wastes his valuable human energy in something that is doomed to frustration. Instead of wasting his time with business speculations, he should seek the life of plain living and high spiritual thinking and thus save himself from the perpetual materialistic unrest. The bestial civilization of eating, sleeping, fearing, and sense gratifying has misled modern man into forgetting how powerful a soul he has. As we have already discussed, the soul is a spiritual spark, many, many times more illuminating, dazzling, and powerful than the sun, moon, or electricity. Human life is spoiled when man does not realize his real identity with his soul. Lord Chaitanya appeared with Lord Nityananda to save man from this type of misleading civilization. Systematic training of the mind and intelligence is therefore needed so that at the time of death one may consciously desire a suitable body, either on this planet or another material planet or even a transcendental planet. A civilization that does not consider the progressive advancement of the immortal soul merely fosters a bestial life of ignorance. Text 23.
The question was asked, is that Krishna, his, any of his limbs, they can function as any other of his limbs.
Yes.
When we get our spiritual body, will it happen to us?
Right, what's the advantage?
You know, we can do our service better, apparently.
Well, if that's the idea is that it's that kind of thing, then why not Vaikuntha where you have four arms? Yeah, so means the spiritual aspect is not limited. But that doesn't, but the point is we have to, it's not about being distracted by these things. Because if it is, then what's the advantage? We can say, but then we're doing these things in a different way. But do we see Krishna ever eat other than sitting down and just picking things up and putting his mouth, or looking with just without his eyes, or walking by his feet? Right. So human pastimes means that aspect is nice, because then the whole rasa, you go through the endeavor to in the interaction. Does that make sense? So this idea is just making it easier, but then what's the advantage of it being easier? Because we're saying it's easier, it's better. It's like a washing machine. It's easier. That's why it's better. But then, now what do you do with the time?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So it's a matter of looking at as, you know, whether it is or whether it isn't, what does it matter? Right? You know, that's the way Krishna is, that's how, you know, we understand how he's on the altar and you bring the plate with his eyes, he eats. You know, so then it works. But the point is, how you say, the human pastimes means we generally don't see him doing that. Right? You know, he just does things in a standard way. But being the Lord, then he can be in 16,108 palaces or with 16,108 gopis dancing, but he's dancing with his feet and, you know, moving his hands and like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of why get distracted by these things? You know, why not just be focused on Krishna? You know, and that affection between the devotees. Because either way, the point is that, oh, it means, why is it better? It means, what would you do? They say, oh, it would be better. So, give an example. How would it be better?
You know, moving stuff with your glance or, I don't know, cleaning with your legs. You know.
Okay, and what will you do with your hands? Right, exactly. That's the whole point, is that why not just use your hands? You know, you're saying glancing and all that, but then what is it you're going to be doing that's more? What is it that needs to be done that you need to move it with your eyes? You know what I'm saying? What is it that you're, you know, so that means I can do magnificent things, but then is that sweetness? Is that brudge? No. You know, so that's the point, is that, you know, why go there? You know, it's one of those things, because they're just mathematical options that the mind can speculate on. You know, so, but why do that? You know, that's all. Does that make sense? Good. Lord Krishna manifests his own form in Mathura and Dwarka. He enjoys pastimes in various ways by expanding into the quadruple forms. Vasudev, Sankarshan, Prajumna, and Aniruddha are the primary quadruple forms, from whom all other quadruple forms are manifested. They are all purely transcendental. Only in these three places, Dwarka, Mathura, and Gokula, does the all-sporting Lord Krishna perform his endless pastimes with his personal associates. In the Vaikuntha planets of the spiritual sky, the Lord manifests his identity as Narayana and performs pastimes in various ways. Krishna's own form has only two hands, but in the form of Lord Narayana, he has four hands. Lord Narayana holds a conch shell, disc, club, and lotus flower, and he is full of great opulence. The Sri Bhu and Nila energies serve at his lotus feet. Srila Prabhupada. In the Ramanuja and Madhva sects of Vaishnavism, there are extensive descriptions of the Sri Bhu and Nila energies. In Bengal, the Nila energy is sometimes called the Lila energy. These three energies are employed in the service of four-handed Narayana in Vaikuntha, relating how three of the Alwars, namely Bhuta Yogi, Shara Yogi, and Branta Yogi, saw Narayana in person when they took shelter at the house of a Brahmana in the village of Kehali. The Prapannamrita of the Sri Sampradaya describes Narayana as follows. They saw the lotus-eyed Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, mounted on Garuda and holding Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, to his chest. He resembled a bluish rain cloud with flashing lightning, and in two of his four hands he held a conch and a disc. His arms stretched down to his knees, and all his beautiful limbs were smeared with sandalwood and decorated with glittering ornaments. He wore yellow clothes, and by either side stood his energies, Bhumi and Nila. There is the following reference to the Sri Bhu and Nila energies in the Sita Upanishad: Mahalakshmir Devasya Bhinabhina Rupa Chaitana Chaitanatmika Sadevi Trividha Bhavati Shaktyatmana Icha Shakti Kriya Shakti Sakshat Shaktir Iti Icha Shaktis Trividha Bhavati Shri Bhumir Nilatmika. Mahalakshmi, the supreme energy of the Lord, is experienced in different ways. She is divided into material and spiritual potencies, and in both features she acts as the willing energy, creative energy, and internal energy. The willing energy is again divided into three, namely Shri, Bhu, and Nila. Quoting from the revealed scriptures in his commentary on the Bhagavad Gita 6.4, Madhvacharya stated that Mother Material Nature, which is conceived of as illusory energy, Durga, has three divisions, namely Shri, Bhu, and Nila. She is illusory energy for those who are weak in spiritual strength, because such energies are created energies of Lord Vishnu. Although each energy has no direct relationship with the unlimited, they are subordinate to the Lord because the Lord is the master of all energy. In his Bhagavat Sandarbha, text 23, Srila Jiva Goswami, so here text would mean of the Anucheta? Okay. Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhu states, the Padma Purana refers to the eternally auspicious abode of Godhead, which is full in all opulences, including the energy Shri, Bhu, and Nila. The Maha Samhita, which discusses the transcendental name and form of Godhead, also mentions Durga as the potency of the Supersoul in relationship with the living entities. The internal potency acts in relation with his personal affairs, and the material energy manifests the three modes. End quote. Quoting elsewhere from the revealed scriptures, he states that Shri is the energy of Godhead that maintains the cosmic manifestation, Bhu is the energy that creates the cosmic manifestation, and Nila, Durga, is the energy that destroys the creation. All these energies act in relation with the living beings, and thus they are together called Jiva Maya. Okay, so then you're dealing with this principle of the three. And so you're going to see them, you know, going in from you know, the Icha, Kriya, and Jnana like this, and then within it, they also then have their same subdivisions. So within the Icha, then you have again Shri, Bhu, and Nila. Does that make sense? So this feature is manifest on all the levels. And then even down on the Jnana, then you have the what's on this side, but you also have the material side. And then again it has three, goodness, passion, ignorance, right? And she's taking those forms, and then, does that make sense? Or you have creating the material world, maintaining it, and then destroying it. So with the Shri element, it's created with the Bhu element, Bhu element is created, Shri element, it is maintained, and with the, and Nila element, then it's destroyed. Like that. It's a principle like Sambhanavideya and Prayojana. It'll apply everywhere. Does that make sense? Yeah. Although his pastimes are his only characteristic functions, by his causeless mercy, he performs one activity for the fallen souls. He delivers the fallen living entities by offering them the four kinds of liberation: Salokya, Samipya, Sharshti, and Sorupya. Those who attain Brahma Sayuja liberation cannot gain entrance into Vaikuntha. Their residence is outside the Vaikuntha planets. Outside the Vaikuntha planets is the atmosphere of the glowing effulgence, which consists of the supremely bright rays of the body of Lord Krishna. That region is called Siddha Loka, and it is beyond the material nature. Its essence is spiritual, but it does not have spiritual varieties. It is like the homogeneous effulgence around the sun. But inside the sun are the chariots, horses, and other opulences of the sun gods. Srila Prabhupada. Outside of Vaikuntha, the abode of Krishna, which is called Parabrahma, is the glaring effulgence of Krishna's bodily rays. This is called the Brahma Jyoti. The transcendental region of that effulgence is called Siddha Loka or Brahma Loka. When impersonalists achieve liberation, they emerge into that Brahma-loka effulgence. This transcendental region is undoubtedly spiritual, but it contains no manifestations of spiritual activities or variegatedness. It is compared to the glow of the sun. Within the sun's glow is the sphere of the sun, where one can experience all sorts of varieties. So the Brahma Jyoti will be outside the planets. And then in the planets, then the Lord and his associates and their pastimes, all that's going on. As though devotion to the Lord, as through devotion to the Lord, one can attain his abode. Many have attained that goal by abandoning their sinful activities and absorbing their minds in the Lord through lust, envy, fear, or affection. Srila Prabhupada. As the powerful sun, by its glowing rays, can purify all kinds of impurities, so the all-spiritual personality of Godhead can purify all material qualities in a person he attracts. Even if one is attracted by Godhead in the mode of material lust, such attraction is converted into spiritual love of Godhead by his grace. Similarly, if one is related to the Lord in fear and animosity, he also becomes purified by the spiritual attraction to the Lord. Although God is great and the living entity small, they are spiritual individuals, and therefore as soon as there is a reciprocal exchange by the living entity's free will, at once the great spiritual being attracts the small living entity, thus freeing him from all material bondage. This is a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 7.1.30. Where it has been, text 36. Where it has been stated that the Lord's enemies and devotees attain the same destination. This refers to the ultimate oneness of Brahman and Lord Krishna. This may be understood by the example of the sun and the sunshine, in which Brahman is like the sunshine and Krishna himself is like the sun. So, if we're taking it that Krishna is non-dual, then the Lord's enemies and devotees, they all attain the Lord. But they'll be attaining different features. Right? The devotee will attain the Bhagavan position, the demon will attain the, the Brahma Jyoti. But they all are attaining the Lord. So in that way, he's equal with everyone. Since the devotees want to interact, therefore, he offers that. The others don't want to interact, but they're concentrating on him, so then they'll emerge into the Brahman. Srila Prabhupada. This verse is from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.278 of Srila Rupa Goswami, who further discusses the same topic in his Laghu Bhagavatamrita, Purva 5.41, where he refers to the Vishnu Purana 4.15.1, where Maitreya Muni asked Parasara in regard to Jaya and Vijaya, how it is that Hiranyakashipu next became Ravana, and enjoyed more material happiness than the demigods, but did not attain salvation. Although when he became Shishupal, quarreled with Krishna and was killed, he attained salvation and emerged into the body of Lord Krishna. Parasara replied that Hiranyakashipu failed to recognize Lord Nrisingadeva as Lord Vishnu. He thought that Nrisingadeva was some living entity who had acquired such opulence by various pious activities. Being overcome by the mode of passion, he considered Lord Nrisingadeva an ordinary living entity, not understanding his form. Nevertheless, because Hiranyakashipu was killed by the hands of Lord Nrisingadeva, in his next life he became Ravana and had proprietorship of unlimited opulence. As Ravana, with unlimited material enjoyment, he could not accept Lord Ram as the personality of Godhead. Therefore, even though he was killed by Ram, he did not attain Sayuja, or oneness with the body of the Lord. In his Ravana body, he was too much attracted to Ram's wife, Janaki, and because of that attraction, he was able to see Lord Ram. But instead of accepting Lord Ram as an incarnation of Vishnu, Ravana thought him an ordinary living being. When killed by the hands of Ram, therefore he got the privilege of taking birth as Shishupal, who had such immense opulence that he could think himself a competitor to Krishna. But each time he gets more in comparison. Right? Although Shishupal was always envious of Krishna, he frequently uttered the name of Krishna and always thought of the beautiful features of Krishna. Thus, by constantly thinking and chanting of Krishna, even unfavorably, he was cleansed of the contamination of his sinful activities. When Shishupal was killed by the Sudarshan Chakra of Krishna as an enemy, his constant remembrance of Krishna dissolved the reactions of his vices, and he attained salvation by becoming one with the body of the Lord. From this incident, one can understand that even a person who thinks of Krishna as an enemy and is killed by him may be liberated by becoming one with the body of Krishna. What then must be the destination of devotees who always think favorably of Krishna as their master or friend? These devotees must attain a situation better than Brahmaloka, the impersonal bodily effulgence of Krishna. Because there's that attraction, there's that affection, so therefore they'll attain a higher position. But because they're absorbed in the Lord, they will be connected with the Lord. Devotees cannot be situated in the impersonal Brahman effulgence, into which impersonalists desire to merge. The devotees are placed in Vaikuntha Loka or Krishna Loka. This discussion between Maitreya Muni and Parasara Muni centered on whether devotees come down into the material world in every millennium like Jayami Jai, who are cursed by the Kumaras to that effect. In the course of these instructions to Maitreya about Hiranyakashipu, Ravana, and Shishupal, Parasara did not say that these demons were formerly Jayami Jai. He simply described the transmigration through three lives. It is not necessary for the Vaikuntha associates of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to come to take the roles of his enemies in all the millenniums in which he appears. The quote-unquote fall down of Jayan Vijay occurred in a particular millennium. Mm-hmm. Jayan Vijay do not come down in every millennium to act as demons. To think that some associates of the Lord fall down for Vaikuntha in every millennium to become demons is totally incorrect. It means there's plenty of living entities that can be the Heisei. Happy to take up such occupation, right? Thus, in the spiritual sky, there are varieties of pastimes within the spiritual energy. Outside the Vaikuntha planets appears the impersonal reflection of light. That impersonal Brahman effulgence consists only of the effulgent rays of the Lord. We have skipped the path. Oh, yes, we did. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has all the tendencies that may be found in the living entity, for he is the chief living entity. Therefore, it is natural that sometimes Lord Vishnu wants to fight. Just as he has the tendencies to create, to enjoy, to be a friend, to accept a mother and father, and so on, he also has the tendency to fight. Sometimes important landlords and kings keep wrestlers with whom they practice mock fighting. And Vishnu makes similar arrangements. The demons who fight with the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the material world are sometimes his associates. When there is a scarcity of demons and the Lord wants to fight, he instigates some of his associates of Vaikuntha to come and play as demons. When it is said that Shishupal merged into the body of Krishna, it should be noted that in this case, he was not Jai or Vijay, he was actually a demon.
He was actually a
demon. Yeah, because the others would go back to their place. Like that. Because this is, it'll be a regular thing that's happening. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like Ram always goes to Lanka. You know, so there's always that. So when there's no one to play the role of the demons, then he might have his associates come. Like that. So. Thus, in the spiritual sky, there are varieties of pastimes within the spiritual energy. Outside the Vaikuntha planets appears the impersonal reflection of light. That impersonal Brahman effulgence consists only of the effulgent rays of the Lord. Those fit for Sayujya liberation merge into that effulgence. Beyond the region of ignorance, the material cosmic manifestation, lies the realm of Siddha Loka. The Siddhas reside there, absorbed in the bliss of Brahman. Demons killed by the Lord also attain that realm. Footnote 2. This is a verse from the Brahmanda Purana. In that spiritual sky on the four sides of Narayana are the second expansions of the quadruple expansions of Dwarka. Vasudev Sankarshan Prajumna Aniruddha consists his second quadruple. They are purely transcendental. Srila Prabhupada. Actually, the explanation of the quadruple forms in the Vedic literature cannot be understood by the speculation of a conditioned soul. The quadruple forms should therefore be accepted just as they are described. The authority of the Vedas is such that even if one does not understand something by his limited perception, he should accept the Vedic injunction and not create interpretations to suit his imperfect understanding. In his Shariraka Bhasya, however, Shankaracharya has increased the misunderstanding of the monist. Right, so in other words, you're supposed to accept the Vedic literatures to remove these doubts. But unfortunately, Shankaracharya, for the monist, he simply increased them. The quadruple forms have a spiritual existence that can be realized in Vasudeva Sattva, Shuddha Sattva, or unqualified goodness. So unqualified means without material qualities. Right? Which accompanies complete absorption in the understanding of Vasudeva. The quadruple forms, who are full in the six opulences of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are the enjoyers of the internal potencies. When it is said that Sankarshan is Jiva, this indicates that he is the predominating deity of the living entities. Similarly, Pradyumna is the predominating deity of the mind, and Aniruddha is the predominating deity of the ego. Right? So here's another also feature of how it's put together. Right? Because then the ultimate thing is the false ego. That's what makes the material.
Right? It shifts one position.
Yeah, it seems to shift. Yeah, because here you can also, if you say predominating deity of the mind, but the mind means the senses. So then he's still in that position. And then here, the Aniruddha, the false ego, because that's what your goal is, that's what you're trying to obtain, that's how the mind is functioning, based on false ego. Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, so you're just taking different aspects of the same position. Right? Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Aniruddha have all the potent features of the absolute personality of Godhead, according to the revealed scriptures, which contain undeniable facts that no one can refute. So they have all the potencies, just for their different activities, they take different positions. Because otherwise, then they just do that, you know, the Lord just do that in that one position. But then he takes four positions to perform the various activities. Does that make sense? Therefore, these members of the quadruple manifestation are never to be considered ordinary living beings. Each of them is a plenary expansion of the absolute Godhead. And thus, each is identical with the Supreme Lord in knowledge, opulence, energy, influence, prowess, and potencies. The evidence of the Pancharatras cannot be neglected. That's why I say that this one just belongs to this deity. No, he has all of them. But depending upon how which aspect you're bringing out, then you'll say it in a different way. Because if you say the senses, then the senses is controlled by the mind. Does that make sense? Yeah. The evidence of the Pancharatras cannot be neglected. Only untrained persons who have not genuinely studied the Pancharatras think that the Pancharatras contradict the Shrutis regarding the birth or beginning of the living entity. In this connection, we must accept the verdict of Srimad Bhagavatam, which says, quote, "The Absolute Personality of Godhead, who is known as Vasudeva, and who is very affectionate towards his surrendered devotees, expands himself in quadruple forms who are subordinate to him, and at the same time identical with him in all respects," end quote. Since Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha are, respectively, the predominating deities of all living entities, the total mind and the total ego, the designation of Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha as jiva, mind, and ego are never contradictory to the statements of the scriptures.
I'm thinking, just to establish the position, Vasudeva, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha, it takes, you know, quite some time. And now in CC, it shifts and then it actually blows your mind away.
Yes. Well, the point is we're trying to see a broader thing, because one position is good for a particular aspect of understanding. But the other aspect, because if from these three deities everything is connected, That means all these things are connected to each other. So depending on what aspect you're taking. Like we were saying in the morning, you have power. But then there's power of the body, power of the mind, power of the words. You know, when we say words, that means the senses. Some of the things. So, then you have those aspects that are there, which can be connected to three deities. But at the same time, all those three can just be counted as power. Right? Because you're going to use all of that to affect. It's not just the body's going to work on its own without the mind and without the senses. You know what I'm saying? So it just depends upon what you want to bring out, then either what formula you use or which aspect of the formula, what presentation. Okay. So that's why it's important to understand that Krishna is doing all these aspects. It's all coming from Krishna, because if that's understood, even if one doesn't understand the mechanics in between, then it still works. Because otherwise, if it's more based on the mechanics, until you understand it, you can't move forward. Right? But here, the aspect is, if you remember Krishna, then it all works out. Because if you have Krishna, Krishna is all of his expansions, is all of these aspects. But the point is that he, as the Lord of the Icha Shakti, that's the most pleasant. That's the most attractive. Right? So as Braja Krishna, that is his original natural form. Then he expands as all the others, you know, for the variety of devotees, the variety of the realms, and as support for his pastime. Just like, let's say, if you're talking in Braj pastimes, because you're going to have, it all works together. So Krishna, it's not that from one thing to the next, he can do so many things at once. Right? So let's say, in the Braj pastimes, do they talk about Dharma Shastra? Do they talk about Bhagavad Gita? Okay, so where does that come from? Right? So it comes from here. It comes from his being, the scriptures are revealed here. And then, because there's not a difference between the Goloka Leela and the Boma Leela, therefore, for them, it's the same place. So then those aspects happen here. And so then he speaks Gita, you know, all these things. You have, you know, Brahma, you have Swayambhuva Manu, you have all these different aspects that are going on here. And then from that, they can be, then they have their natural place in the pastime. So we say Braj is complete in itself, right? Because all, whatever is of value, you know, that is the wonderfulness, it's all there. And that means it has its aspect from everywhere else. If someone's specifically focused on another area, then it's expanded out to make it complete in itself. But it's complete around that as a focus, rather than just Krishna and the sweetness of interaction with the devotees. Does that make sense? So if one appreciates Krishna, even if all these mechanics of the Kriya and Jnana Shaktis and all that kind of aspect, and the Lord's manifestations doesn't fully make sense, the direct element can make sense, because it's a revealed thing. It's not by intelligence. Right? But since we have to engage body, mind, and words, therefore we're studying, we're reading, we're hearing, we're engaging our senses. Does that make sense? Because this is the process. You see, Krishna himself does it. He goes to Gurukul. Right? You know, and Krishna appreciates when devotees sit and talk and discuss about him and spiritual life and how to apply it in their own life and their own understandings, realizations. Does that make sense? Yeah. So all that then becomes, you know, important. It's just all part of the process. So even if these different angles don't necessarily make sense, we just keep going, and with time, you know, something will be explained and it makes sense. Or at least it makes sense that it doesn't make sense. You know, like that. Footnote 3. In his purport, Srila Prabhupada quotes Sripad Ramanujacharya's commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, the Sri Bhashya. An excerpt of this citation is presented here in quotes. Is that after, or that was what was here? Okay. The original quadruple forms, Krishna, Balaram, Prajumna, and Aniruddha, expand into another quadruple, which is present in the Vaikuntha planets of the spiritual sky. Therefore, the quadruple forms in the spiritual sky are the second manifestation of the original quadruple in Dwarka, as explained above. Vasudeva, Sankarsham, Prajumna, Aniruddha are all changeless, transcendental plenary expansions of the Supreme Lord, who have no relation to the material modes. The Sankarsana form in the second quadruple is not only a representation of Balaram, but also the original cause of the causal ocean, where Karanadakshaya Vishnu lies asleep, breathing out the seeds of innumerable universes. So here it's interesting, because he mentioned that before, Krishna, Balaram, Prajumna, Aniruddha. In the spiritual sky, there is a spiritual creative energy, technically called Shuddha Sattva, which is a pure spiritual energy that sustains all the Vaikuntha planets, with the full opulences of knowledge, wealth, prowess, etc. All these actions of Shuddha Sattva display the potencies of Mahasankarsan, who is the ultimate reservoir of all individual living entities. Who are suffering in the material world. Right? When the cosmic creation is annihilated, the living entities who are indestructible by nature rest in the body of Mahasankarsana. Sankarsana is therefore sometimes called the total jiva, right? Because all living entities rest in him at the time of destruction. As spiritual sparks, the living entity, you know, and then we're always wanting to identify where we come from in time and space. So then we're given in time and space, then you're from Mahasankarsha. Does that make sense? That's the whole thing, because we won't accept the definitions based on beyond time and space. So then, here it is. Sankarsana is therefore sometimes called the total jiva. As spiritual sparks, the living entities have the tendency to be inactive in the association of the material energy, just as sparks of a fire have the tendency to be extinguished as soon as they leave the fire. The spiritual nature of the living entity can be rekindled, however, in association with the Supreme Being, because the living beings can appear either in material or either in matter or in spirit. The jiva is called the marginal potency, right? Because he can function in either of these. So that's why he's marginal. There's the spiritual, they'll only function on that side. They don't even bother with this side.
So if people ask this kind of question, then we can say, we come from Balaram, Mahasankarsan, or Karandakashaya Vishnu. It's all same kind of tattva.
They're the same person. It's just a matter of, the point is there... you know, that attraction for Krishna, or there's not. That's what defines. Because the soul is eternal. You know what I'm saying? Because they're trying to say, where am I coming? But the soul is eternal. They're not created. So it's just a matter of where you manifest. But if you have polluted consciousness, then you manifest in one place. If you're not, then in another place. You know? So it's just... The best is just to sidestep, because it's not something that can be understood by time and space. But, yeah. Sankarsana is the origin of Karana Vishnu, who is the original form of creates the universes, and that Sankarsana is but a plenary expansion of Sri Nityananda Ram. Right? So that's what we're getting at. There in the spiritual sky, the personal feature of Balaram, called Mahasankarsana, is the shelter of the spiritual energy. He is the primary cause, the cause of all causes. One variety of the pastimes of the spiritual energy is described as pure goodness, Vishuddha Sattva. It comprises all the abodes of Vaikuntha. The six attributes are all spiritual. Know for certain that they are manifestations of the opulence of Sankarsana. There is one marginal potency, known as the jiva. Mahasankarsana is the shelter of all jivas. Sankarsana is the original shelter of the Purusha, from whom this world is created and whom it is dissolved. He, Sankarsana, is the shelter of everything. He is wonderful in every respect, and his opulences are infinite. Even Ananta cannot describe his glory. That Sankarsana, who is transcendentally pure goodness, is a partial expansion of Nityananda Balaram. Right? Because when you're dealing with this, just the generic energy, the Tathasta Shakti, and you're talking it's generic, why does it have to be, you know, it's just like if Krishna's dealing with a particular aspect, like his Vasudeva, he's just dealing with that existence of things. So that existence of things naturally means also the existence of the jivas. Right? It's not going to be anything separate. So what's the problem in that? So you're talking about existence and everything. But what does that have to do with your relationship with Krishna? You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like trying to equate these things, but it's not. Because then the point is if we're so determined that we have to have a high grade, you know, social status of appearing from some aspect of Braj, then the problem comes up is then what's your relationship? You know what I'm saying? That's the whole thing. You come from Balaram, then is he your father? You know what I'm saying? And then, you know, how does that work in the pastimes? You know? Does that make sense? So the thing, why get into those things? What does it matter? The point is we go away from Krishna because of being, not seeing things in connection with him, and we go towards Krishna when we see things in connection with him. That's the important element. That's the actual sign. The other things are secondary. That's like, let's say you're trying to teach someone how to cook something, and you're using the frying pan and all that. And in the conversation, then they ask, well, what's the pan made out of? You know? Like that. Okay, and if you can say, yes, this, and then, you know, but then there's this, and then this has that, and I've heard this metal is better, and this and that, and that, and so many things, and they can't get past the pan, how will they ever learn to cook? And they can say, no, but without these things, how can you, you can cook fine without it. You know what I'm saying? So the point is, if we understand Krishna as the primary element, the secondary elements aren't as important. Whatever is important is given by the acharyas. You know, what Sanatana Goswami, that's what's important in Sambandhagyan. What's given by Rupa Goswami, that's what's important in Abhideya. And outside of that, it's not as important. Because why do all these things? Because if you get in it, then, you know, does Krishna have parents? You know, he's God, how can he have parents? And then it drops it out of those pastimes. Then you're in Vaikuntha. You know, so then why go there? You know, not that it can't be explained, but why is it has that driving, burning issue? Because then where is it going to get you? Not grudge. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah. Verses 49 to 91. Commentary on verse 9. I have briefly explained the 8th verse. Now please listen with attention as I explain the 9th verse. I offer my full obeisances under the feet of Sri Nityananda Ram, whose partial representation, called Karana Dakshai Vishnu, lying on the Karana ocean, is the original Purusha, the master of the illusory energy, and the shelter of all the universes. Verse 9 of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Outside the Vaikuntha planets, is the impersonal Brahman effulgence. Huh? Go, okay. Outside the Vaikuntha planets is the impersonal Brahman effulgence. And beyond that effulgence is the Karana ocean, or causal ocean. Srila Prabhupada. It is the function of Mahasankarsana in the form of Karana Dakshai Vishnu to glance over the material creation, which is situated beyond the limits of the causal ocean. The material nature is connected with the personality of Godhead by his glance over her and nothing more. It is said that she is impregnated by the energy of his glance. The material energy, Maya, never even touches the causal ocean, for the Lord's glance focuses upon her from a great distance away. The glancing power of the Lord agitates the entire cosmic energy, and thus its actions begin at once. This indicates that matter, however powerful she may be, has no power by herself. Her activity begins by the grace of the Lord, and then the entire cosmic creation is manifested in a systematic way. So by his glance, that agitates the material energy, and then you have that systematic manifestation. The personality of Godhead is the direct or remote cause of creation, and material nature is the indirect or immediate cause. So that's the interesting. Is direct is the remote, and indirect is the immediate. Right? Because you see it's happening here. But it's not actually the source of that energy. So what you see manifest, that is the indirect or the immediate. And the Lord, then he is the direct, but the, what was the remote. Right? Because we always like to put them together in our own way. But they don't actually work like that. That's the whole thing. Whatever you see, the potency that makes it work, that's, you can see, is that's the immediate. But it's not the direct, because the direct is, it's actually the potency of Krishna. So it's the indirect, means it's the form through which that energy is coming. So he's the direct, what makes it work, but he's remote. And she's the indirect, because, but the immediate, because we'll say, like here, we'll say these bricks are what are, you know, holding up the building. So that's the immediate effect. But it's indirect, because it's the potency that's in bricks. That's Krishna that's making it work. So Krishna actually is the one directly holding it up. Right? But he's remote, meaning he's not right. He doesn't have to be right here. He does it through his energy. Yeah?
But the remoteness is beyond.
Yeah, remote means beyond. He's not directly there doing it. Like you have remote control, you sit in one place, but the thing's working somewhere else.
Material energy, the reason of existence of material energy only desire of Jiva to be separated from Krishna.
Means that's why, means no, the actual reason is Krishna's compassion to bring down his living entities, give them the opportunity to come back to the spiritual world in proper consciousness. And continue that relationship with Krishna.
If Jiva removes the desire to be separated, then it is not necessary to exist for material energy.
It's not a matter of that. It means because you can do other things than have to make this whole elaborate material world for the Jivas. You know what I'm saying? You could just put them in a box somewhere and lock it and throw away the key or something. You know what I'm saying? Why do we have to make this whole... Why would... You know, the Jivas want, so... So what? You know what I'm saying? The guys down at the pub, they want to, you know, tell the government how to run the country. So what? Does that make sense? So, they may be wayward, but Krishna, out of his kindness, then wants to bring them to the proper position. Therefore, the creation is there to bring the living entities back to Godhead. So it's not that because the Jivas, you know, have that material desire, therefore Krishna is forced to make the material world. It's out of his kindness.
I mean, if you see from the angle that Krishna has free energy, and that internal energy doesn't have desire to be separated from Krishna.
Yes.
Desire.
It means he can have the desire. It's not that he has. They're marginal, so they could go either way. So of the living entities, as Prabhupada points out, 9 out of 10 take service to Krishna. 1 out of 10 doesn't. They're the ones that are here.
it means that it's only eternal energy will exist. It's not necessary to have material energy, but because jiva with opportunity to have this desire to exist.
So, but then again, it comes down to it's the jivas that are the cause. The Krishna is the cause. He's the one that he has energy. So if you're going to have internal energy, it's natural if things are complete, they'll be external, and there'll be something in between. Just like if you have day, then lack of day is night. And then twilight is what's in between day and night. Everything's like that, right? Does that make sense? You know, so you're always going to have these features, like what's a door? Let's say you have two rooms, and in between the two rooms there's a door. Right? Which room does the door belong to? You know? But, depending on who's in which room, they could argue it's their door. Right? So the point is now, if you don't have a door, how are the two connected?
It means the purpose of jiva to be in the middle between two energies.
No. It means the jivas are the natural expansion of the internal potency that's on the edge of the two. You have the land, you have the sea, and you have the beach. So is the beach the ocean, or is the beach the land? You can say it's the land, but then water comes up. Like when the wave comes in and the beach is underwater, then I can ask, do you want to go into the ocean? And that means into the water that's, you know, below that's the beach. You know what I'm saying? But when the wave goes back, then we'll say it's beach. You know what I'm saying? You know, so it's land. So that's the thing, it has both, it can be either. The jiva by nature is from the internal potency. Right? But because they're small, they can come under the influence of either potency.
On one side, Bhagavad Gita says that material energy is inferior energy, jiva belongs to superior energy.
Yeah.
But from another side, it says that material energy is divine energy, and because of our size, we can't be liberated from it ourselves on the basis of nature. It means that our difference with material energy in function and in self energy.
Means we have our original nature, as Prabhupada was saying, that the jiva itself, the jiva is more brilliant than the sun itself. You think the sun's so bright, the jiva is brighter than that, but in their transcendental state. Right? So, but the point is that they only can take advantage of that when they see their relationship with Krishna. Yeah. So, when they see their relationship with Krishna, then they're able to function in that spiritual capacity. But if they don't, then they're covered by material energy. What you have to remember is that the jiva is 1/10,000th the tip of the hair. Right? The material energy is 1/4 of unlimited. So that's the whole point. If we're not taking shelter of Krishna, we will be controlled by Maya. But the nature of the jiva is spiritual, so they don't belong here. But because they identify with the material, therefore they become overwhelmed.
Different that material energy has unity and describes the part of spiritual energy, but Prakasha Shakti has a big quantity and describes so many jivas and they are little and they can't be.
Where are you going with this?
I just want to understand my nature.
You understand the jiva. The tatastha shakti means that energy that can hold together material and spiritual in the same place at the same time. That's the tatastha shakti. That's the potency. Therefore, the body and the jiva is spiritual, body is material. But how do those two interact? That's the tatastha shakti. The personality of Godhead is the direct or remote cause of creation, and material energy is the indirect or immediate cause. Materialistic scientists, puffed up by the magical changes their so-called inventions have brought about, cannot see the real potency of Godhead behind matter. Therefore, the jugglery of science is gradually leading people to a godless civilization at the cost of the goal of human life. Having missed the goal of life, the materialists run after self-sufficiency, not knowing that material nature is already self-sufficient by the grace of God, thus creating a colossal hoax in the name of civilization. They create an imbalance in the natural self-sufficiency of material nature. Because material nature is already self-sufficient. It's created by Krishna, so it's complete in itself. Right? And so it can run by Krishna's arrangement in itself. So if we're functioning in line with Krishna, with the laws of Krishna, then we can take part in that. But if not, then with the civilization, we create so many things that thinks that's what's going to create, self-sufficiency. You know, it's just like, okay, let us say we're out in the village, right? And there's no electricity. But there's nighttime, right? It's natural. It's not that in villages there's no nighttime, there's only nighttime in the city, right? Like that. So, then how do they produce light? By fire. Yeah, that means that fire, they use something, some natural ingredient to burn, right? Either they make a fire, you know, out of wood, the cow dung, something like this. They make lamps, you know, through oil or something. You know, so like that, then they're able to illuminate. Now, the point is you have a field, you grow, let's say, you know, we're in Bengal, so you grow some mustard, right? From the seeds you get mustard oil, you light your lamps. Right? So it's just nature has all these things. But what are those people talking self-sufficiency? No. Who's talking self-sufficiency? People in the city. So what in the city, self-sufficiency, what would light look like? Right? Light's still a light bulb. We make a light bulb that needs a little less electricity. But how is that powered? Right? By, you know, solar panels or something. How is the solar panel made? You know, by some kind of, you know, big factory and all the things like that. It's not that you have, you know, Santa Claus with his, you know, his little elves sitting down there manufacturing, you know, solar panels or not out of whatever it is, you know, snow and lichen and, you know, maybe a few leaves off of the little miniature, birch trees that are up there and, you know, old, reindeer fur that, you know, fell off last year and stuff like that and, you know, like that. You know, no? Maybe a few, what are those called? I don't know, it's a little yellow berry. Like farther south you have blackberries, they have yellow, they're yellow. With seeds in them. No. That's what the silkworms eat. That's really a little far where it's warmer. Cloudberry. They love them up there. They go nuts for them. You know, so you put all that together and that's how you get a solar panel? No, it's going to be the same machines that are digging all the minerals and materials out of the earth that are running off of petrol. You know? Does that make sense? That makes that. You know, they'll also dig that stuff out and you can make a car or you can make whatever you want. So that's the Prabhupada's meaning. Natural self-sufficiency. Imbalance in the natural. They're creating a colossal hoax in the name of civilization. Right? So, not that cities aren't there. In the Vedic means Dwarka is a very big city. The point is that you still have to live within the natural context. Does that make sense? You know, because they talk about it should be this, it should be natural and all this and that, but where's the farm? Where's the people working on those farms? Where's the, you know what I'm saying? It's not part of the plan, really. Does that make sense? So, the difficulty comes up is that when one depends on the Lord and follows His culture, then naturally self-sufficiency is just part of it. Like that. You know, otherwise when we're not God conscious, then we have to create our own, being self-sufficient, being kind, being nice, all these different things. So that's it. You get a very, very complicated system. Right? And and the problem is that Prabhupada points out, is the cost of the godless civilization at the cost of the goal of human life. Okay? So then that becomes more important. And people give up God consciousness. You know, it's like the phones, when you buy them, you know, one of the aspects of advertising is they're not free range. Right? You ever heard of a free range phone?
It's not in the free range, there's no such.
No. Free range means like animals. They're out in the open and they walk around as they please. That's free range. You know, so it's just the phones are out there moving around and all that, and somehow or another we go out and collect them and then bring them into the city and have people. No, you understand? So it's that. The difficulty is that the problem comes up that we're not seeing the connection to Krishna. We may see one thing, okay, we start with the end result, we're using it in connection with Krishna, and so then that's fine. But then, the whole point is how it goes back. Does that make sense? There's a good chance that the handwritten letters or hand-typed letters that Srila Prabhupada sent out during his 11 years, you know, in the society, by that written word, or that typed word, by these old archaic things called post, you know, or snail mail, he got, through his writings, he accomplished more than our whole society together on, you know, the internet connections, getting anything done. So it's not that it's an improvement. Just because it's quicker doesn't mean it's better. You know, because if that was the thing, then if quicker was better, then how you say, you'd have to go to, you know, high-end, you know, 3-star hotels and all that to get, you know, Maggi noodles or, you know, some sushi, right? You know, it's like Maggie News, at least you put some hot water on it and cook for 2 minutes. Sushi, it's raw. They don't even cook it. Is that okay? So that's the whole thing, is that we have to be very, very careful. That we see is that it's Krishna that's making it work. If self-sufficiency has a value, why? We're looking at the material energy being the self-sufficient, you know, where we're seeing it. But where does self-sufficiency come from? Why is it the world, if man pulls back from an area, nature just goes back to being self-sufficient? So how is that? Where does that potency come from? That comes from Krishna. So the immediate cause is material energy, the remote cause is Krishna. So we surrender to Krishna, therefore then things have a proper balance. Otherwise there's always an imbalance. Okay? And the main imbalance is the living entities aren't trying to bring their life in connection with Krishna. That makes sense. It's not the imbalance meaning all the social structure and this and that. Because even if you have it running nicely, if no one's a devotee, it's out of balance. It's supposed to be the balance between the soul, you know, and their becoming self-realized and their time spent in the material energy. Therefore, modern science has created an imperfect, godless civilization that is in gross ignorance of the ultimate cause. Scientific advancement should have a great goal to attain, and that great goal should be the personality of Godhead. In the Bhagavad Gita, it said that after conducting research for many, many births, great men of knowledge who stress the importance of experimental thought can know the personality of Godhead, who is the cause of all causes. When one knows Him perfectly, one surrenders unto Him and then becomes Mahatma. Right? So that's what science is for, knowing the Lord. So in other words, when it's directed at the primary, we may be looking at the secondary in the context of the primary to know the primary. Then it works. But if we're just studying the secondary to know secondary and think from that we'll understand why it works without the primary, that doesn't make any sense at all. Does that make sense? Like, let's say I have an electric machine. I know nothing about electricity. Right? But by studying the machine, I'll understand how it works and why it's there and everything like that. Right? But the point is if you don't know electricity, how will you know how the machine functions, what it's working? Does that make sense? So the science is meant that way. I mean, popularly nowadays it's used just to study things in a secondary way. So we think, yes.
I talked with the children of the British, and some told me that they don't want to go to spiritual world because there are no computer games. And how do you explain to children the principle of computer games exist?
The point is what's there in the, what is there in the computer game? What is so attractive in the computer game? Okay. No, but I'm saying that the principle is that you can go in there, you can do so many things like that, you know, they can do it forever. You know, it's just like this, but the point is then, it's just the nice thing of just being able to go on that aspect of, being engaged in various activities. In the spiritual world, you have that's how it works. Things work eternally there. You know, well, here is that they don't want to go to the spiritual world because there's no video games. Okay, fine. But the point is, even in this lifetime, can they play video games eternally? No, one, they're going to die. Before they're going to die, they have to pay their mortgage. Right? And to pay their mortgage, they have to have a job. And to have a job, then they're not going to be playing video games. Right? Unless they're in the military and they're, you know, a drone driver or something like that. But, you know, I'm sure that there's enough of them out there. So it's not like that. You know what I'm saying? It's that the only reason it's fun now is because their parents are paying the bills. But when they get bigger and they have to pay the bills, when will they play these games? So it'll end anyway. And then when they get a job and they're doing this and that, so they'll be busy. Then when they go to play video games, they're so much more advanced in all that than what they know. And, a 5-year-old will be able to beat them in the game. So then it loses a little bit more interest. Does that make sense? Yeah.
There are communities of assets in computer games that they can create different things. Can we say that in spiritual world, in James and Krishna, they also can create?
These, means they're only wanting to create because everything around them is boring. But the point is, in the spiritual world, it's not boring. Why do you need to create anything? You know, why do you have to create it? Someone else has already created it. Mother Jashoda cooks lunch. You don't have to do it. So you can get distracted by these things if you want, but then you have to grow up. And then what? If that's all you have, that's your only ability is being able to play a video game, then it's not impressive. You know what I'm saying? You know, you just have to see what works on the individual kid that you're saying these things. You know, you just have to find which avenue catches their attention. Surrounding Vaikuntha is a mass of water that is endless, unfathomed, and unlimited. The earth, water, fire, air, and ether of Vaikuntha are all spiritual. Material elements are not found there. The water of the Karna Ocean, which is the original cause, is therefore spiritual. The sacred Ganges, which is but a drop of it, purifies the fallen souls. In that ocean lies a plenary portion of Lord Sankarsana. He is known as the first Purusha, the creator of the total material energy. He is the cause of the universes, the first incarnation, casts his glance over Maya. Maya Shakti resides outside the Karana Ocean. Maya cannot touch its waters. Maya has two varieties of existence. One is called Pradhan or Prakriti. It supplies the ingredients of the material world. Srila Prabhupada. Maya, the external energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is divided into two parts. Maya is both the cause of the cosmic manifestation and the agent who supplies its ingredients. As the cause of the cosmic manifestation, she is known as Maya. And as the agent supplying the ingredients of the cosmic manifestation, she is known as Pradhan. Right? So then, as Pradhan, all the ingredients come from there, and as Maya, she's controlling it and making the arrangement. So he has these two features.
The Sandarbha there is as Guna Maya and Jiva Maya.
Oh, yes, yes. So controlling the living entity is that Jiva Maya. Could probably use that term before. He just used that as a...
Jiva.
Sorry?
Using term Jiva
Maya. Well, that was the end of something. Yeah, I don't remember where. But he used the term Jiva Maya. Ah, here it is. Page 10. All these energies act in relation with the living entities, and thus they are together called Jiva Maya. Bhu is the energy that creates the cause of manifestation, and Nila, Durga, is the energy that destroys the creation. All these energies act in relation with the living beings, and thus they are together called Jiva Maya. Although the living entity is primarily related to the causal portion of Maya, he is nevertheless conducted by the ingredients of Maya. Three forces work in the causal portion of Maya: knowledge, desire, and activity. The material ingredients are the manifestation of Maya as Pradhan. In other words, when the three qualities of Maya are in a dormant stage, they exist as Prakriti, Avyakta, or Pradhan. The word Avyakta, referring to the non-manifested, is another name of Pradhan. In the Avyakta stage, material nature is without varieties. Varieties are manifested by the Pradhan portion of Maya. The word Pradhan is therefore more important than Avyakta or Prakriti. Because Prakriti is dull and inert, it cannot actually be the cause of the material world. But Lord Krishna shows his mercy by infusing his energy into the dull, inert material nature. Thus Prakriti, by the energy of Lord Krishna, becomes the secondary cause, just as iron becomes red hot by the energy of fire. Therefore, Lord Krishna is the original cause of the cosmic manifestation. Prakriti is like the nipples on the neck of a goat. They cannot give any milk. But it can't do anything itself. It's only when it's empowered by Krishna. So that's why she's the secondary, but the immediate, because that's what we see, because that's where the Jiva Maya is. Srila Prabhupada. This is more clearly explained by Sri Kapila Dev, an incarnation of Godhead in Srimad Bhagavatam 3:28-40. Although smoke, flaming wood, and sparks are all considered together as ingredients of a fire, the flaming wood is nevertheless different from the fire, and the smoke is different from the flaming wood. End quote. The material elements, earth, water, fire, etc., are like smoke. The living entities are like sparks. A material nature, as pradhan, is the flaming wood. But all of them together are recipients of power from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and are thus able to manifest their individual capacities. In other words, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the origin of all manifestations. Material nature can supply only when it is activated by the glance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So unless he glances, and in it that potency is there, only then she can function. Otherwise, pradhan just sits there. That's what pradhan does best. Just as a woman can deliver a child after being impregnated by the semen of a man, so material nature can supply the material elements after being glanced upon by Mahavishnu. Therefore, pradhan cannot be independent of the superintendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 9:10. Mayadyakshena prakriti suyate sachara charam. Prakriti, the total material energy, works under the superintendence of the Lord. The original source of the material elements is Krishna. Therefore, the attempt of the atheistic Shankya philosophers to consider material nature the source of these elements, forgetting Krishna, is useless, like trying to get milk from the nipple-like bumps of skin hanging on the neck of a goat. Because they're taking it just back to pradhan, and they're saying that's the origin. But that's only the origin because, one, it's Krishna's energy, and two, then he empowers that energy. Otherwise, it's inert matter. Even as an energy of Krishna can't function. So without Krishna's superior involvement, it can't work. Next verse. The Maya aspect of material nature is the immediate cause of the cosmic manifestation, but it cannot be the real cause, for the original cause is Lord Narayana. Just as the original cause of an earthen pot is the potter, so the creator of the material world is the first Purusha incarnation. Karanarnavasai Vishnu. Lord Krishna is the creator, and Maya only helps him just as an instrument. Just like the potter's wheel and other instruments, which are the instrumental causes of a pot. The first Purusha casts his glance at Maya from a distance, and thus he impregnates her with the seed of life in the form of the living entities. The reflected rays of his body mix with Maya, and thus Maya gives birth to myriad universes. Srila Prabhupada. The conditioned state is caused by misuse of the individual independence of the spiritual platform, for this separates the living entity from the association of the spiritual energy. But when the living entity is enlightened by the grace of the Supreme Lord or his pure devotee and becomes inclined to receive his original state of loving service, he is on the most auspicious platform of eternal bliss and knowledge. The marginal jiva or living entity misuses his independence and becomes averse to the eternal service attitude when he independently thinks he is not energy but the energetic. This misconception of his own existence leads him to the attitude of lording it over material nature. Material nature appears to be just the opposite of the spiritual energy. The fact is that the material energy can work only when in contact with the spiritual energy. Originally, the energy of Krishna is spiritual, but it works in diverse ways, like electricity, which can exhibit the functions of refrigerating or heating through its manifestation in different ways. The material energy is spiritual energy, covered by a cloud of illusion or maya. Therefore, the material energy is not self-sufficient in working. Right, so there is this covering, but where does this come from? It comes from the Lord. Right, so they're taking these elements that Brahman becomes covered by illusion, but where does the illusion come from? They can't say. But the point is that the material energy then, the material energy through Krishna's potency, then it's able to function. So the spiritual nature of the Brahman means that material energy is still Brahman, but being covered by the illusory potency, then it functions. But that's coming from Krishna, the transformation of his energies. So unless you accept the energies of the Lord, you can't actually understand creation. Right? The Lord, his energies, his will, him as a person, then creation makes sense. Otherwise, it won't make sense.
When you say Jiva is energy transformed in something else.
You mean that it's only covered by something else? Yes. The Jiva is not creating his own covering. Right? Because it's Krishna's energy that's transforming. The Jiva becomes covered.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? But when the living entity is enlightened by the grace of the Supreme Lord or his pure devotee and becomes inclined to revive his original state of loving service, he's on the most auspicious platform of eternal bliss and knowledge. The marginal jiva or living entity misuses his independence and becomes averse to the eternal service attitude when he independently thinks he is not energy but energetic. This misconception of his own existence leads him to the attitude of lording it over material nature. Material nature appears to be just the opposite of the spiritual energy. The fact is that the material energy can work only when in contact with the spiritual energy. Originally, the energy of Krishna is spiritual, but it works in diverse ways, right? Because the Swarup Shakti is spiritual energy. But it has all these various aspects. You know, so it can do all these... The material energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is called Maya, or illusion, because in two capacities, by supplying the material elements and by causing material manifestation, it makes the conditioned soul unable to understand the real truth of creation. However, when a living entity is liberated from the conditioned life of matter, he can understand the two different activities of material nature, namely covering and bewildering. So then the covering aspect is the pradhan, and the jiva maya is the bewildering.
Covering is the jiva maya, and pradhan is like because of the so many options available.
Then you get bewildered. So supplying material elements and causing material manifestation. But at the same time, you look at it as that he's covered by the material elements. And then in that state, he's bewildered by the modes of nature. Either way, it works. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the controller of everything, and the living entities are always controlled, either by the spiritual energy or by the material energy. Therefore, a living entity can never become the controller of material or spiritual energies. The natural position of the living being is always as a subordinate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When one agrees to act in such a position, he attains perfection in life. But if one rebels against this crucible, he is in the conditioned state. The Purusha... Yeah. Yeah, the natural position, and then if not, then trouble. The Purusha enters each and every one of the countless universes. He manifests himself in as many separate forms as there are universes. When the Purusha exhales, the universes are manifested with each outward breath. Therefore, when he inhales, all the universes again enter his body. Just as atomic particles of dust pass through the openings of a window, so the network of universes pass through the pores of the skin of the Purusha. The Brahmas and other lords of the mundane worlds appear from the pores of Mahavishnu and remain alive for the duration of his one exhalation. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, of whom Mahavishnu is a portion of a plenary portion. Footnote 4. This description of the Lord's creative energy is from the Brahma Samhita 548. Then, quote, "Where am I, a small creature of seven spans, the measure of my own hand? I am enclosed in the universe composed of material energy, material nature, the total material energy, false ego, ether, air, water, and earth. Okay, so this is where you're talking about the elements is seven. But you have the five, plus you have Padan and Mahatattva. And what is your glory? Unlimited universes pass through the pores of your body just like particles of dust passing through the opening of a window. Footnote 5. When Lord Brahma, after having stolen all Krishna's calves and cowherd boys, returned and saw the calves and boys were still roaming with Krishna, he offered this prayer, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.11, in his defeat. A part of a part of a whole is called a kala. Sri Balaram is the counterform of Lord Govinda. Balaram's own expansion is called Mahasankarshan, and his fragment, the Purusha, is counted as a kala, or a part of a plenary portion. I say that this kala is Mahavishnu. He is the Mahapurush, who is the source of the other Purushas, and who is all-pervading. Garbhodakshai and Kirodakshai are both called Purushas. They are plenary portions of Karanodakshai Vishnu, the first Purusha, who is the abode of all the universes. So he's a kala of Balaram, and then you have Garbhodakshai and Kirodakshai, who are further portions. Right? Quote, unquote, Vishnu has three forms called Purushas. The first, Mahavishnu, is the creator of the total material energy, Mahat. The second is Garbhodakshai, who is situated within each universe. And the third is Kirodakshai, who lives in the heart of every living being. He who knows these three becomes liberated from the clutches of Maya. Footnote 6. This appears in the Laghu Bhagavatamrita, Purvan 2.9, for it has been quoted from the Satvata Tantra. Although Karanodakshai Vishnu is called the Kala of Lord Krishna, he is the source of Matsya, Kurma, and the other incarnations. Right? So it just keeps going. Right? Quote, all these incarnations of Godhead are either plenary portions or parts of the plenary portions of the Purusha avatars. But Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. In every age, he protects the world through his different features when the world is disturbed by the enemies of Indra. Footnote 7. This quotation is Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.28. That Purusha, Karanodakshai Vishnu, is the performer of creation, maintenance, and destruction. He manifests himself in many incarnations, for he is the maintainer of the world. That fragment of the Supreme Lord, known as the Mahapurush, appears for the purpose of creation, maintenance, and annihilation, and is called an incarnation. That Mahapurush is identical with the personality of Godhead. He is the original incarnation, the seed of all others, and the shelter of everything. Quote, the Purusha, Mahavishnu, is the primary incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Time, nature, Prakriti as cause and effect. The mind, the material elements, false ego, the modes of nature, the senses, the universal form, complete independence, and the moving and non-moving beings appear subsequently as his opulences. Footnote 8. This is a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 3.6.42. Yeah, so here Prakriti is cause and effect, meaning as Pradhan and as Jiva Maya. Right? In the beginning of the creation, the Lord expanded himself in the form of the Purusha incarnation, accompanied by all the ingredients of material creation. First, he created the 16 principal energies suitable for creation. This was for the purpose of manifesting in material universes.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Shri Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jainatai Gaurakumana ki.